Radio Prague News.
A regional court judge who presided over high-profile criminal cases in the Czech Republic was murdered in his home on Monday. The Prime Minister attended an official ceremony in Lety, southern Bohemia, commemorating Romani victims of the Holocaust. Prague's Evropská street remains closed with the exception of local trams. Police are investigating the brutal murder of Ostrava Regional Court Judge Miloslav Studnička, who was killed on Monday at his family home in the Novojičín area. The murder is thought to have taken place at around 11 a.m. The judge's throat had been cut, IDNES and Czech TV reported. Judge Studnička presided over a number of high-profile criminal cases in the Czech Republic, including that of the Vítkov arsonist who left a toddler with severe lifelong disabilities in a racially motivated attack. The defendants in that case were found guilty and received stiff prison sentences. The 64-year-old judge had inherited his home in Frenštát pod Radhoštěm and opted to move in, sources said. The Prime Minister and other officials attended an official ceremony on Monday at the site of a former concentration camp in Lety in southern Bohemia, commemorating Romani victims of the Holocaust. In his speech, the Prime Minister recalled that many interned at the site had died of hunger and disease and stressed that racial prejudice could never again be allowed to rule people's lives. At the same time, he admitted that the government did not have the necessary funds to remove a highly controversial pig farm in the vicinity, built after the war. Previous Czech governments were likewise unable ever to meet the high relocation costs demanded by the farm's owners. The Lety concentration camp was opened in 1940 during the German occupation of Bohemia and Moravia. 1,308 Roma were interned there. More than 300 died at the site, while more than 500 were sent on to the Auschwitz death camp in Poland. The Supreme State Attorney Pavel Zeman has met with the Justice Minister Pavel Blažek to discuss a new bill overseeing state prosecutors agreeing to work out individual details. The minister has made clear a good deal of debate and discussion will be required before the final wording is set. An emphasis is reportedly being put on added accountability on the part of prosecutors as well as the protection of their constitutional rights and freedoms. During their meeting, the Supreme State Attorney told the newly named minister he was insisting on his earlier recommendation of respected state prosecutor Lenka Bradáčová to head Prague's High State Attorney's Office. Prague's Evropská street remains closed to traffic with the exception of local trams after a sinkhole 5 meters deep collapsed in a section of the road on Sunday. Prague Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda told Czech radio on Monday the incident was in all likelihood not related to construction of a new metro tunnel 12 meters below the surface. Construction there is being conducted by Metrostav, which in the past was linked to a number of similar incidents in the city. Prague's Evropská street connects the center of Prague with Ruzhinje International Airport and is one of the city's most heavily used routes. Buses and cars should be allowed back by the end of the week. Finally, a quick look at the weather. Mostly clear skies are expected into Tuesday, with daytime temperatures reaching highs of around 26 or 27 degrees Celsius. I'm Jan Vellingeren. That's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, the Prime Minister goes to Lety, the site of a former concentration camp to commemorate Romani victims of the Holocaust. So why are some Romani organizations boycotting the event? And this being Monday, we'll bring you a summary of the sports news. Later on in the show, an interview with actress and broadcaster Veronica Hicks. And we'll end the show as usual with a Czech lesson, so do please stay with us. Czech Prime Minister Petr Nečas on Monday attended a commemorative ceremony for the victims of the Romani Holocaust. At the site of a former concentration camp in Lety, Mr. Nečas admitted the Czech responsibility for the murder of over 5,000 Romanis during the war. But the official event sparked controversy among the Romani community, which says the government should first make sure the victims are given a dignified memorial, Jan Richter reports.
Petr Nečas became on Monday the first Czech prime minister to pay tribute to Czech Romanis who died in the concentration camp in Leti in southern Bohemia during the war. More than 1,300 Romanis were held prisoners in the camp between 1942 and 1943. Over 300 of them died there, while others were transported to Nazi extermination camps. In total, over 5,000 Czech Romanis died in the Holocaust. In his speech, the prime minister said that Czechs also played a part in the Romani Holocaust.
Na rozdíl od těch Romů, kteří skončili v Osvětimi, zdejší...
Unlike those Romanis who perished in Auschwitz, the victims here died mainly of typhoid and dysentery, of hunger and exhaustion, as a result of conditions imposed on them by the Nazis. But we should also openly admit that these conditions were imposed on them by the local authorities and police, that is, by Czechs. That should be the main lesson for us. We must never allow racial prejudices to dominate our lives.
For the last 17 years, commemorative events at Leti have been held on the 15th of May. This year, dozens of Romanis, including relatives of the survivors, came to the memorial service, as well as several ambassadors and cultural dignitaries, with a notable absence of top-level Czech officials. But Prime Minister Petr Nečas chose the 9th of July to pay tribute to the Romani victims at Leti, 70 years after police in the occupied Czech lands began confining Romanis in concentration camps. However, several Romani groups, including the Committee for the Redress of the Romani Holocaust, called for a boycott of the event, arguing the government should first relocate a large pig farm that was established on the site of the camp in the 1970s and erect a dignified memorial honoring the victims. Historian and human rights activist Markus Pape says the government's reluctance to pay for the farm's relocation is a symbol of the society's negative attitude towards Romanis.
Represents the general attitude towards Roma as second-class citizens, that actually their victims of Hitler Nazism do not deserve such a care or such a dignified memorial activity than others. I'm very sad to state this, but we know that there are huge problems in discrimination of Roma in the fields of education, housing, employment, and other fields. So this seems to be another aspect of all this problem.
Some expected Prime Minister Nečas to address the issue in his speech, but were disappointed to hear that the government has no plans to remove the farm from the site of the former concentration camp. After the ceremony, Prime Minister Nečas said he was not going to make empty promises, noting that the strained state budget could not pay for the removal of the farm.
Jan Richter with that report. Now, as every Monday, we bring you a summary of the sports news, courtesy of Dominic Yoon.
I recall how talented he was, how many shots he could hit. That was quite amazing to me. How clean he was hitting the ball.
But what did you think he needed to do to take it to the next level? What does he still need to do?
Well, I don't like talking about it too much, Anna.
No, I understand that.
That's something we work on.
Okay, what did you think you could teach him?
Hopefully how to win 7 matches in a major.
That was tennis legend Ivan Lendl there talking cryptically to US sports network ESPN on his decision to coach Britain's Andy Murray. But alas, British hopes of the first Wimbledon men's singles title since 1936 were dashed on Sunday as Murray was defeated by the Swiss former champion Roger Federer 4-6, 7-5, 6-3 and 6-4. Murray, the first British men's Wimbledon finalist in 73 years, turned to retired Czech-born player Ivan Lendl back in December last year to serve as full-time coach to the 25-year-old Scot. Lendl is famous for never having won Wimbledon despite winning 8 other Grand Slam finals and playing in 19 Grand Slam finals. Media reports have highlighted some parallels between Murray and Lendl, specifically that Lendl lost his first 4 Grand Slam singles finals, exactly the same number as Murray, following his match on Sunday. This is the first time the 52-year-old Lendl, who was born in Czechoslovakia and became a US citizen in 1992, has served as a coach. He may play the next 5 and not win, or he may win the next 5, who knows? We don't really know, but what we know is that it's worth trying, Lendl told the New York Times on Monday, reflecting on Murray's defeat. And staying with tennis, the last remaining Czech players crashed out of the finals of the Wimbledon Championships on Saturday. American sisters Venus and Serena Williams defeated Czechs Andrea Hlaváčková and Lucia Hradecká in the women's doubles finals in straight sets 7-5, 6-4. The Czech players won the French Open in 2011, but only reached the second round of the Wimbledon tournament during that year. The 27-year-old Prague-born Hradecká and the 25-year-old Plzeň-born Hlaváčková caused an upset in this year's quarterfinals, knocking out reigning French Open doubles champions Sara Errani and Roberta Vinci in straight sets. However, they proved no match for the Williams sisters in the finals, Serena putting on a particularly energetic performance, having won the women's singles championships earlier in the day. Meanwhile, 9-time Wimbledon women's singles champion, the retired Czech-American tennis player Martina Navratilova, lost her Wimbledon ladies' invitation doubles final 6-3, 6-2 over the weekend. Navratilova was teamed up with fellow Czech and 1998 Wimbledon winner Jana Novotná. The pair went down to Lindsay Davenport and Martina Hingis in the round-robin tournament designed for players who have retired from the professional game. In a BBC radio interview on Sunday following the match, Navratilova choked back tears as she recalled her defection from communist Czechoslovakia in 1975 at the age of 18. She also remembered how her parents could not gain permission to leave communist-era Czechoslovakia and thus missed seeing her first Wimbledon singles win in 1978. Navratilova spoke how her parents drove to the German border in the west of the country and ended up watching the final on German TV, adding that the regular Czech TV wouldn't show it because I was a persona non grata in those days. But on a more cheerful note, she added that a year later, Britain's Duchess of Kent intervened in order to have the authorities permit Navratilova's mother to attend the 1979 tournament, which the tennis legend also won. And the Czech Republic won the Women's Volleyball League title on Friday after a three-set win over their Bulgarian rivals. Karlovy Vary was watched by around 3,800 spectators in the KV Arena. Bulgaria were up early in the match, but the Czech Republic fought back in the first set, winning 26-24. The second set went more smoothly for the Czechs with a 25-18 win, while Bulgaria put on a valiant show in the third, fighting hard for every point, but the Czechs ultimately prevailed 25-23. Player Anita Havlíčková, who scored 18 points during the game, was also named MVP, Most Valuable Player, while her teammates Helena Havelková and Julia Jašová were also singled out for exceptional play. This season, the Czech team has only lost 2 matches out of 14 played.
That was Dominic Yoon with a summary of the sports news. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. And now the spotlight is on David Vaughan's guest on One-on-One, Veronica Hicks. Although she was born in Britain and has never lived in the Czech Republic, the actress and broadcaster is every bit as Czech as she is English. She speaks Czech without a hint of an accent and gives every impression of being totally at home in Prague, even though it has never been more than her virtual home. In an interview for Radio Prague, Veronica Hicks tells David Vaughan how this came about.
While many of those who fled Czechoslovakia after the communist takeover gradually lost their Czech identity, this was not the case with Veronica Hicks's parents. Despite leaving all they owned in Prague, they somehow managed to keep their Czechness unscathed. Even 60 years later, the family remains remarkably Czech, with the tradition being kept alive by Veronica's Czech-speaking daughter Natasha. When she came into our studio, I asked Veronica Hicks to tell the story.
How did that come about? Well, my parents, both from Prague, actually from Vinohrady, my father Francouzská, my mother Slovenská.
Just around the corner from this very building.
They met in the church of Náměstí Mír. But they left after the elections of 1948. My dad was a pretty good tennis player. He was an international tennis player. And he had an opportunity to go and play in Yugoslavia. He came back and he said, I think perhaps it's time to leave. They left in 1949 and they travelled around Europe a bit and they started their journey in Belgium, then went to Paris and lived in Paris for 2 years, which was marvellous apparently. Again, he was playing tennis and he'd met some lovely English tennis players who'd said, oh, come to England, it's a bit dull but it's safe. And so they came to dull and safe England and I was born. But they took Czech to me. They always spoke Czech to me right from the start.
And so it was a little Czech oasis in the middle of London.
Yes, there were a few friends, people who knew each other from Prague, who'd sort of drifted into England, really.
And you came to Britain also with your grandmother as well, or your grandmother joined you later, didn't she?
My grandmother came in the mid-50s, and she lived with us until she died in 1982. And of course, she helped me a lot with the language, because I spent a lot of time with her.
And it sounds like it must have been quite a schizophrenic kind of childhood. I can imagine growing up with Czech parents and the Czech granny in a Czech household, presumably with dumplings and all the traditional Czech things, but being in the middle of a completely non-Czech world.
Yes, and I still like dumplings. Obviously, I don't eat them because they're far too fattening, but I mean, all those delicious Czech tastes I absolutely adore. But I don't think I felt schizophrenic particularly. I went to an English school afterwards and I became this bilingual person who could slot in pretty easily, actually.
And being bilingual has played a role in your life since, hasn't it, really? Because I mean, you're an actress, you work with your voice, you can move effortlessly in and out of many different accents because of being bilingual. Mm. I think
it helped me enormously. I mean, I speak quite a lot of languages, and I'm sure that it was because I was bilingual from the get-go, as the Americans say.
How many languages do you speak?
I speak six, and I'm learning Mandarin, which, of course, is fearsome, terrifying. It'll take me years, but
what's
I'm
inspired
sure that,
you to do that?
Well, I sort of feel that there's a lot of them, and I want to be able to talk to them when they all turn up on our shores.
And so did you go on when you left school to drama school?
Well, I went to university where I read drama and modern languages, always keeping my options open. I did actually go to a drama school in Paris after I'd finished university, which was bizarre because it was a mime school where you don't speak at all. And I've pretty much spoken for all of my career. So, yes, I found out that I didn't want to be a mime artist at all.
And how did you experience the events of 1968 in Czechoslovakia? Because it must have filtered through in your family that horror of the Soviet invasion and all the hopes that had preceded it.
I think I was in Italy, actually, when it happened on that day in August. But we had been here in the spring because of the Prague Spring, and it was so exciting. I mean, I had been to Prague several times from about the age of 13, but then suddenly in 68 we came, and it was exciting.
And of course, you really shared the optimism that Czechs
Well, absolutely,
felt.
And because at that time, people who had been locked up and so on, suddenly everyone was talking. You know, you'd talk to someone who was giving you petrol and he would tell you that he was a professor of physics and he was doing this, and everyone was just chatting. Everyone was so alive with hope. And then, yeah, terrible, terrible, I remember that.
And in the years that followed the period of so-called normalisation, were you able to keep up links with Czechoslovakia, or did it get harder and harder?
I think in the 70s it was quite a tough time, actually, and the fact that I spoke Czech was kind of against me. I came as I was a young fledgling actress. I also worked a bit in tourism, and I found myself coming here with a bunch of American tourists, actually, and I thought it was perfectly normal that I would speak Czech to the authorities, you know, to the border guards. And that got me into a lot of trouble. Why do you speak Czech? You know, what, who are you? And all that sort of thing. And they used to go through my address books and things. And I realised that, you know, I was sticking my neck out for no particularly good reason. But I can also understand why it is that, you know, some people who had left years ago were more loath to put their name to the Charter 77. They didn't want trouble. And when you get journalists these days talking about, well, you know, what did they do? They never said a thing. It's only if you've been through things, if you've been frightened, that you know you really want a quiet life. You don't want to get involved again.
And you're married to an Englishman.
I'm married to an Englishman.
And you have a daughter.
We have a daughter who speaks Czech.
Which is amazing. So you were born outside Czechoslovakia. Your
yes.
daughter was born outside Czechoslovakia.
Yes.
Now the Czech Republic, and you both speak Czech.
We do. Her Czech is sight-splittingly funny. It's quite fluent. She's just been working here for a year. The grammar, of course, is terrible because it's very complicated grammar, but it's very fluent. And the marvellous thing is she has what I had, which is she comes here and she doesn't feel a stranger.
And how does your husband cope with having all this Czech family?
Ah, very mysterious. I think he understands more than he lets on, but he grunts a lot. He doesn't say a single word in Czech, but if you say pass the potatoes, for example, you know, making lunch, then he will pass the potatoes without actually admitting that he understands.
And your mother is still alive and well in London. Yes, and so your husband also has a Czech mother-in-law, the classic babička.
Yes.
That must be interesting as well.
Yes, except my mother doesn't acknowledge being a babička. My mother is, as she says, I am in denial. I don't talk about old age. And she's fabulous. So she doesn't call herself babička, but we call her babi.
And she's never lost her Czech accent.
And she's never lost her Czech accent. And I always make fun of her. And she says, why are you making fun of me? And I said, because it's charming and lovely. But she's in very good health. And, you know, they've had a good life in England. But here is still important.
And in your career, you've acted in television, film, and also in, I believe your speciality is in audio books.
Yes, I do a lot of audiobooks, which I like doing very much because I moved more and more into sort of broadcast and documentary work. So talking books is a little bit of acting. But of course, it also led to something which I believe is going to start here. I have heard rumours that it will start, which is audio description, which is making TV and film accessible to visually impaired people.
So it's literally describing what
it's describing.
Is going
it's
on.
A sort of voice under talking about the visual aspects for people who can't see very well.
And that's already, I know, pretty well established in Britain. So is it also gradually catching on here in the Czech Republic?
Well, I was hearing today, in fact, that I believe the legislation is kind of planned. It won't happen without legislation because all these things are sort of extras which cost money. But I know that there are people with the technique and the wherewithal to do it. So that will happen here.
And can you ever foresee moving back to Prague? Or are you quite happy to come here from time to time?
I think that once you've been in more than one place, I think that's what you're like. I mean, I think that, I guess I can't imagine being anywhere 100% all the time. But of course, I know exactly the streets where my grandmother used to go to school. You know, I know all the family history. So it is a part of me without actually being a part of me.
Anyway, we're out of time. So Veronica Hicks or Hicksova? Hicksova?
I did try the Hicksova years ago, but it was just too difficult in England, so Hicks it is.
Thank you very much indeed for talking to us.
Thank you.
Veronica Hicks speaking there to David Vaughan on her last visit to Prague roughly a year and a half ago. The interview was first aired in October 2010. Now, in the final part of today's programme, a Czech lesson from Pavel Horáková's popular ABC series, which Radio Prague is currently rebroadcasting.
Welcome to the ABC of Czech, in which this season we explore Czech vocabulary related to food and cuisine. The series is slowly drawing to a close, but it would not be complete without a look at the Czech Christmas table.
Vánoční stůl.
So even though Christmas is still some time away, it will be our topic for today. As usual, I'm joined by
Zuzana Durčáková.
The most important festive day in Czech tradition is Christmas Eve.
Štědrý den.
Or generous day. Despite its name, one is supposed to be very modest when it comes to food. Legend has it that if you fast all day on Christmas Eve, you will be able to see a golden pig in the evening.
Zlaté prasátko.
Only a few people respect that tradition these days, but many eat meatless dishes for lunch, such as
houbový kuba,
a traditional meal made from barley and mushrooms. In the past, people ate, for example, apple strudel,
jablečný závin,
or
strudel,
or a typical Czech Christmas cake,
vánočka.
By the evening, everyone has worked up their appetite for the festive dinner of fried carp,
smažený kapr,
with potato salad,
bramborový salát.
Some families also have fish soup,
rybí polévka.
Czechs are not great fish eaters, so some people prefer Wiener Schnitzel,
vepřový řízek,
on their Christmas Eve table. In the Czech Republic, too, Christmas has become a feast of consumption to some extent, and the main cause of those extra pounds one has to lose in January are Christmas cookies,
vánoční cukroví,
which you can't escape because even if you don't bake your own, your colleagues and friends will bring you their samples. There are dozens of varieties, and every family has slightly different recipes. Many women start baking the Christmas cookies as early as the beginning of December. By Christmas, they have to bake a new batch because the first one will have mysteriously disappeared. There is no fixed tradition as to meals on Christmas Day or Boxing Day, but roast duck,
pečená kachna,
is a favorite feature. And we've covered the most important Christmas food vocabulary. And next time, we'll take a look at the New Year's table. Till then,
dobrou chuť.
Bon appétit.
Pavla Horáková with ABC of Czech, and I'm afraid it's brought us to the end of today's program. You'll find us at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you, as always. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today, and take care.